This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Small businesses are the backbone of the American economy, generating 80% of jobs and half of GDP. They are also suffering in the current economy with limited access to capital or support from big banks. A number of concerned individuals are stepping in to bump up capital for businesses in their own communities. It's called Locavesting, also the title of a new book by financial journalist Amy Cortese. She addressed the annual meeting of the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund this week with some examples and challenges of the Locavesting model, which intends not to occupy Wall Street, but to bypass it altogether. And Amy Cortese, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you.
Give us the elevator pitch, the sort of summary of Locavesting.
Sure. Well, I came up with a name to describe what I saw going across the country, where people were looking to find ways to invest once again in the local businesses that make up the fabric of our communities.
And you say, once again, your book does point out that this is how communities supported each other for millennia. So what happened?
Yeah, that was the natural way to invest. But over the years, we've sort of gotten away from that. One big reason is the federal securities laws that were put into place after the 1929 stock market crash. They were intended to protect investors, but the unintended consequence many decades later is that it prevents people from investing in a whole range of small private businesses that they really would like to invest in and that could really use the capital.
Regulations are still in place, however.
Yes, they are.
So there is some, we just got a note this morning, John Greenberg handed this to me, from New Hampshire Business Review, crowdfunding gets a big boost in Congress. What's going on congressionally that might change this?
Yeah, that's very exciting. President Obama actually proposed a crowdfunding exemption in his recent Jobs Act that was defeated. But nonetheless, he's still supporting something that would allow crowdfunding to happen on a small scale. And at the same time, you have a Republican-led House bill that just passed nearly unanimously, which was laying out very much the same thing. So rare bipartisan support. Now it needs to go to the Senate, and I'm hopeful that something would pass.
I'm reading here, under the bill, entrepreneurs would be allowed to raise up to $2 million from an unlimited number of investors without having to register their firm with the SEC. Any entrepreneur raising more than $1 million would have to provide audited financial statements to potential investors. So a big victory, I guess, for the Locavesting kind of movement.
So far, yeah, it's not a done deal yet.
Yeah. Now, you write that the odds are stacked against small businesses. What, besides these regulations, lead you to this conclusion?
Well, in this country, there's a gross misallocation of capital. Small businesses create 2 out of every 3 jobs. They employ about half of the private sector workforce, and they are the force of innovation in this country. Yet very little money flows to them, and that's only gotten worse since the financial crisis. Banks still aren't lending. Venture capital goes to a very rarefied few firms. And, who's got rich friends and family anymore? So a lot of small businesses are suffering, and a lot of entrepreneurs with good ideas can't get them off the ground. And our financial markets, the public markets, really cater to the very largest companies.
Yeah, I'm looking at figures that say about $30 trillion invested in securities each year, in mutual and pension funds and investments, mostly in stocks and bonds of corporations, many of them yielding profits to investors. Are there examples of profits for Locavesters?
Yeah, small businesses can be very profitable.
And even some of the big ones. I think you write about Ben and Jerry's in the book.
Yes, yeah. I mean, every company starts small. But one thing about that 30 trillion number, a lot of our investments are made through 401ks, and you're presented with a menu of investments. Well, small businesses are never on that menu. It's always the big businesses. So therefore, that's the way we invest. There are a lot of different things going on within the narrow openings of the current securities laws where people are figuring out ways to invest in local private businesses.
But why should people with little money to invest take that kind of a risk? I mean, this is kind of an unproven market.
Yeah, writ large. But, you know, there are many, many examples of very successful small companies. I mean, Facebook was once small. Apple was once small. And since it's local, you know the company, you're investing in it maybe because you love the product, it's a restaurant, you love the food, you eat there all the time. It's about profit, but it's also about supporting a company that you love, you believe in, you want to see succeed, and that is part of your community and is enriching the community.
Financial journalist Amy Cortese is with us. She addressed the annual meeting of the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund this week and is with us for kind of a primer on locavesting, which is also the title of her new book. Well, you're reminding me of a very relevant story to us here in New Hampshire. River Run Books, which is a partner for the Writers on a New England Stage series from NHPR, looking for investing partners. It's you know, a story of a very beloved local business that has run upon some hard times, as many bookstores have. But you have some examples in the book of this kind of thing exactly. I love the story of the bakery in Michigan.
Mm-hmm, yeah, everyone loves cops and donuts.
What's not to love?
That story is very emblematic of what's happening across the country with bookstores, restaurants, all sorts of beloved sort of mom-and-pop shops. But Cops and Donuts, yeah, it's in Clare, Michigan. There was a 111-year-old bakery that, you know, had served the town forever. It was about to go out of business. One of the cops heard this news and ran back to the precinct and persuaded his eight fellow cops, so the entire police force of Clare, Michigan, to buy the bakery, which they did. They renamed it Cops and Donuts, and they added funny merchandise like T-shirts that say, "Don't glaze me, bro," and DWI, donuts were involved. So they had a lot of fun with it, and it got a lot of media and really has been drawing ever since visitors from all over. And that success has spilled over to the rest of the town, and you're seeing some of the previously vacant storefronts now being filled again, and it's really helped the town prosper.
Well, of course, it sounds, you know, stories like this are great, and they are very much communal-based, but it does call for, locavesting does call for its own potential for abuse and need for regulation for the protection of investors. How are these communities managing that?
Well, it depends on what type of investment you're talking about. In the case of something like Cops and Donuts or the River Run Bookstore, I think what happens there is it's the business owner's reputation in the community that is really the collateral, mm-hmm. right? People are investing in these things because they want to. They love the bookstore. They love the bakery, whatever it is. I think that's more of a problem in some of the larger scale things like crowdfunding. So there are real concerns about the possibility of fraud, but, you know, technology can take care of a lot of that. Look at how eBay, you know, rates vendors. It's the community that rates vendors online. And, you know, if somebody doesn't send your book or the thing that you bought, you're going to get a bad review and people aren't going to go back to you. But the main thing I think that will mitigate risk is keeping it local. So if it's a physical community or a close online community, I think your chances of runaway fraud are much less.
Someone I know said that she invests in the vice funds, as she puts it, you know, tobacco, firearms, because it pays off. So is it just this number of, you know, the usual suspects drawn to do good in communities, you know, who never go to a big box store, you know, that kind of thing, who only eat local and buy local? Can this movement broaden out beyond those usual suspects?
I think it can, and I think it has to really play a meaningful role in changing our financial system. I mean, look at Occupy Wall Street. I think they're voicing a lot of frustration that a lot of people share that may not be out there in the streets, but, you know, people are pretty fed up with Wall Street and that fee-heavy, you know, that sort of extractive, predatory model of capitalism that they practice. This is about a more human-scale capitalism. I think it can promote more broadly based prosperity. And I do think it resonates quite widely. But what we need really are more mainstream ways to be able to invest this way.
Okay, any stock tips for us? For
River Run Bookstore sounds pretty good.
Amy Cortese, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
A business, finance, and environmental journalist. She's also the author of Locavesting, The Revolution in Local Investing and How to Profit from It. She addressed the annual meeting of the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund this week, and there are more links to more on that fund to Amy's blog and to her recently published op-ed in the New York Times. That's all at wordofmouthradio.org. And of course, you can always invest your thoughts and ideas in our locally produced program on Facebook and Twitter. When we come back, pushing back against America's supersized tendencies, we're going to hear about living with little from an advocate of the tiny house movement. It's after a short break. This is Word of Mouth on NHPR.